Hi everybody, welcome to our fourth episode of Lemonology, the knowledge sharing platform. My name's Grant Pringle. I'm the SEO growth specialist at Phil Lemon Agency. And in today's discussion episode, we've got Cameron, who's our head of SEO audit. Welcome, Cameron. Great to have you on board.
Hi, Grant. I'm grateful for you to have invited me on this podcast. It's my first online appearance, I would say, and
brilliant.
I hope it will go fine. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Cameron, and you're obviously, with your wealth and expertise when it comes to technical SEO, just sharing with the audience at the moment, we're going to have two parts in this episode. So we're going to have the first part one episode, which will be delving into the importance of technical SEO and website optimization. And then basically, we'll start with 10 questions, ten key questions based on technical SEO. And then in our second part series, we'll basically delve into more advanced level type of questions that can obviously for our viewers out there to understand, or our listeners as well, to understand and get an understanding of what the importance of optimizing for SEO ranking is all about. So I think without further ado, let's kick off the conversation, Cameron. And I think one of the first questions I have in mind is for our viewers and listeners out there, what exactly is technical SEO and why is it important for website optimization? Why is it very important?
First of all, again, thank you for having me. And
thank you so much.
I love to talk to you. And particularly, that's what I do most of my time. So technical SEO, I would say in SEO, you don't have exact definition, exact terminologies. It's just kind of most used terminologies and most used definitions. So the other day we were having a conversation, a kind of debate in some Facebook groups, like what is included in technical SEO and what is included in content SEO. So there is a very, I would say, a thin lining between what's included somewhere and what's not included somewhere. Ultimately, what it matters is what is going to rank you and what is going to make you more customers and make you more leads and make you more money. So the exact definition, there is no exact definition as far as I know about technical SEO. But we can go about it like it's related to the technical SEO, is related to the technical aspects of the website, like controlling the crawling of the website, controlling the adding indexation of the website, controlling the website performance, controlling the user interface, controlling the user experience, and how it performs for the users. So that's how is broadly, these are the things broadly covered in technical SEO. And now, coming to the second part of your question, I guess it was related to the importance of technical SEO for website optimization. And just like it's clearly evident from the webs, from the definition, from what it is about, like from what the technical SEO is about, crawling and indexation, it's about UI, it's about UX, it's about...
Can you explain to our audience what does UI and UX mean, Cameron? So just for those that aren't a fay with the understanding of both aspects.
Yeah, so these are the terminologies. UI stands for user interface and UX stands for user experience. These are broadly related to how the page perform with users. Like, for example, if I'm loading a website on my mobile or on my laptop or my iPad or iPhone, how does it perform to me on different devices? Is the text visible to every kind of users? How does it perform to color-blinded people and every kind of users, every variety of users? So these are the things that we normally consider in UI and UX. That's the shortest terminologies for a user interface and user experience. So these are also covered in the technical aspects of the SEO as well. So it's important for technical SEO is really, really important for website optimization. It's because it helps you control the crawling of your website by different bots, including Google. It helps you control the user interface, like what is user seeing and how does it feel to them, and what is the experience of the user. So it's all about these things. So website performance is greatly impacted by how is your technical SEO and how deeply search engines understand your content and what's present on the website. So it's very, very important for website optimization when it comes to SEO.
And I think, you know, given the explanation of that, thank you so much for giving that explanation. And I think given, you know, with mobile being one of the highest performing percentages across, you know, usability, it's important that mobile is optimized as much as possible. So, you know, there's different elements. A mobile screen is much smaller than a desktop screen. So you need to be as quite sophisticated and user-friendly as possible.
Yes. So most of the users like me as well, you as well, you would use your mobile, your smartphone to search for anything. Like if I'm searching for a nearby dentist or a nearby doctor, a nearby ENT specialist, or anything like nearby supermarket or any or a barber shop. If I'm searching for it, I'm using my mobile. If I'm searching for some product or services that I want to purchase, I'm using my mobile most of the time. So mobile searches are increasingly becoming more important. They have been very important from the past few years as well, literally a decade, I would say. So they are becoming more important. So it's really important to have your site optimized for mobile users as well. For that thing, we for example, if you have a new website or if a client comes to you and want to check if it's optimized for mobile or not, you just check if it's mobile friendly or not. How do you check that? You just go to mobile friendliness test. You just Google it. This test is by Google officially. So you can just put your website and your page. Yeah. So you can just put your website and your page, and it will tell you if it's mobile friendly or not. And
what we'll do is we'll share that link with our listeners and viewers just below the podcast, so they can peruse and go to that.
Like these are normally short, so I normally like to give a over the shoulder overview of something that I want to show, but just to give you a starting point, a referencing point, we will put the link. I will share the link with you, and you can then put the link in the description. You just go to that link and put your website, and if it's mobile friendly, okay to go. If there are something that needs to be fixed, you just contact your developer, and if you are a developer yourself, you just fix those things. And another area to check if your site or pages are mobile friendly or not is to check your Google Search Console. There is a report in there as well, mobile friendliness as well. So you just go there and see. But just give me a second, then we can take questions. That report is being deprecated. So I don't know the exact date, but it will be retired soon, like the report within the Google Search Console. So these are the two main areas where you can check if your site is mobile friendly or not. Other than that, you can just call your friends, call your colleagues, and tell them, can you please visit that website, this page on your mobile phone, and let me know if there's any problem with that. So that's another standard rule of checking if your website is mobile friendly or not. So
great. For our viewers to understand, Cameron, what is exactly Google Search Console and what is it generally used for?
Google Search Console and Google Analytics. These are the two important tools. They are by Google. So you just if you have a website, you just verify it with them. Like you just kind of verify that these are in your ownership. These properties are in your ownership. So when you verify it, Google Search Console can then tell you the impressions that your website got, the clicks that your website got, if there is any technical issue or problems with your website. So Google Search Console particularly is very, very important tool for technical SEO aspects of your website. So you need to be very clear about what's included in Google Search Console and how to use different tools and reports of Google Search Console. We can have a separate session on that as well, because
definitely there's a discussion different... for that for another day. But yeah, I think yeah, those are the, like you said, are the two key elements, you know, GA4, which is coming around the corner, Google Analytics 4, you know, Universal Analytics is now falling away. And everyone's now kind of being accustomed to GA4. And I think it's an important aspect. But I think, you know, just to kind of share with our audiences.
GA4 has already been implemented. It was June or July, I guess. If it was June, then it would have been already live. By the way, I don't know, because I don't use that much GA. It's for mostly for the marketing aspects of your website, like what is the bounce rate and things. Most of the time I'm busy with Google Search Console, but Google Analytics is also very helpful for your technical issue as well. For example, if users are bouncing back, then you can check if there is any problem with the technical aspects of your website or not. But most of the time, we use Google Search Console.
Definitely. So, yeah. And there's also Google Tag Manager, which connects to Google Analytics and so forth. So that's obviously to trigger certain events and actions or call to actions through your website. So that's a discussion for another day too. So there's quite a lot of these, you know, technical tools around the technical part of SEO, but it's we'll definitely be sharing some more information or more podcasts around these related platforms. But moving on to our second question, Cameron, I think thank you so much for covering and giving an understanding about these various platforms and how mobile is such an important aspect and component in today's life, especially at the speed of your fingertips. You know, everyone's looking for quick clicks, quick information, or should I say quick access to information. So the less clicks to a certain piece of information, the more user-friendlier that can be for the user.
Yes. Studies have proved that if you improve your load speed of the website, it can actually have a good impact on the conversion rate. So if it's impacting your conversion rate, it means it's impacting your money earned as well. So it can it can translate to the amount of money that you're earning from your website or service. So that's a different thing as well. So that's really, really important as well, like the page speed or page improvement. And mobile.
And that's exactly what we were going to just touch on now, you know, is how does actually website speed affect SEO performance, and what are some of the ways or some of the techniques we can improve it?
Yeah, so just like I already mentioned the importance of website speed for converting your users and how can it translate to the money earned. How to improve your page speed? I can just give you some theoretical points. Other than that, it's a completely practical topic that can be shown via over the shoulder video. And people have kind of created courses around this particular topic, just improving your page speed. But I will just give you a few points to just
perfect.
Give you a starting point. These are normally for non-technical users, you normally select a good hosting company. The first point is that, because if the hosting company is not a great hosting company, it means they will be taking money from a lot of people, and then you will be sharing resources with a lot of people. So that means less resources allocated to your website. That means your website will take a lot of time to load. So selecting a good hosting company, that's the first starting point. And then the second point to cover is it's after you have selected a good hosting company, is to, if you are using WordPress, it's to use a good theme. So some themes, some WordPress themes, they are very heavily bloated, very heavily coded. They have a lot of heavy JavaScripts in them. So they take a lot of time to load, even if you have not included in any code and that. Well, so that's another point as well. You select a simple, minimal theme that is not heavily coded, like GeneratePress.
And there's like lots of other themes like Elemental theme and a few others out there, you know. So maybe we can also give some.
Or Devi, I don't know what's it's how is it pronounced, but they are, from what I have seen, they are heavily coded and heavily bloated. So they take some time to load. What I recommend is using GeneratePress and even simple WordPress themes. You can now design your own theme. Just put some elements here in there, and you will be fine. It's not that much of an important point. It should just look fine. That's the key point. And then the third thing, after you have the right hosting company, the right WordPress themes. By the way, I will share some links with you of the right hosting companies and right.
Please, WordPress yes, then we can share it for our listeners. Just below, yeah.
So, and then after you have done these two things, and the next thing is to, like, if you are putting some content media, like images or videos, you need to optimize those as well, so they are not heavily sized, so they do not take a lot of time to be loaded. And then the CSS and JavaScripts that you are using, they should be inlined, minified. So the best practice to do this is to use a WordPress plugin like WP Rocket. Okay. It's a paid plugin. And then NitroPack is also a good plugin, but it's heavily criticized. Some people say it's faking numbers when you search for Google page speed, when you search for your page in Google page speed insights. But somehow it works. Sometimes it works, sometimes it's not. But WP Rocket, it's the standard theme that works most of the time. So yes. I would recommend
WP Rocket. Okay, we'll keep that in mind. Brilliant.
Paying for it. Yeah, we will share that link as well with you. And then, that's all you need to do. And then the right settings within the WP Rocket, that's what it can help you as well with your website optimization. Again, that's a very detailed topic, and for another podcast, if we can do that. Yeah,
definitely. Thanks for that, Cameron. And then just looking at the key elements of on-page SEO. I know in our previous podcast, we touched quite a bit on on-page SEO, but what are those key elements, and how can it be optimized to its full potential?
On-page elements. So on-page elements, by the way, just for our users' understanding and clarification, on-page SEO is different from technical SEO. Sometimes they are intermingled in between, because schema is something that one of the factor of so it's just like I mentioned in the starting, we were having a debate. So some people were saying schema is a part of technical SEO, and some people were saying schema is a part of on-page SEO. So
on-page SEO, Yes, I know we've had that debate before.
People put some aspects of on-page SEO, and then we can obviously link it to technical SEO as well. So on-page SEO is about using the right title for your page, the right headings for your page, and like the heading structures, it matters a lot. Using the right entities, topics, talking about the right intent is very important. So that's one of the most important points that people miss most of the time. It's the search intent, addressing the search intent. How are they missing it? For example, you can have a different idea about a certain topic, and what people are searching for it, that can be different from you, what you are thinking about a certain topic. For example, if you are thinking about accountants, best accountants in the best accountants. You are just given this keyword. Now, if you are based in London or South Africa or Cape Town, you would say it should mean best accountants in South Africa or best accountants in Cape Town, or I can say best accountants in Islamabad or something like that.
Yeah.
But what users mean when they search for best accountants, that's what you want to see. When you search for best accountants in the area from where you have selected that keyword, for example, it's for UK based. For example, you used Arabs, you selected your country to UK, and Arabs is given you a key. We are just discussing the like a theoretical point of view. Most of the time, yes, best accountants in London or something. I'm just explaining explanation point.
Yeah.
So if it's a UK based keyword, it might mean if you set your VPN, if you're not in the UK, if you set your VPN to that location, it may mean best accountants in London, or best accountants in Southampton, or best accountants in Manchester. Maybe if you can look at the SERPs in the ARFs as well, you will be given the top ranking pages and what are they talking about.
So exactly.
Matching the right content, it's very important for on page SEO as well. Using the right content, having no grammatical errors or contextual errors, internally linking to pages where it's important and externally linking to pages where it's needed is also a part of on page SEO as well, I would say. Although it's related to link building, like external linking and internal linking. So these are some broader aspects of on-page SEO, like covering the right topics or entities, matching the search intent, covering the multimedia like images, videos where it's needed, and
alt text, right? We've always spoken about alt text and images just to ensure that Google can pick up your images and so forth.
Yeah. So alt texts are basically for people who are not that like with different abilities, I would say. So if they cannot see image, you explain it to them, like for example if a motorcycle is standing right behind right beneath a tree, I would assume a situation. So if they cannot see the image, unfortunately, if they are definitely able, you can explain within the alt text that a motorcycle, a red motorcycle, a Yamaha, a Honda red motorcycle standing.
Yes.
A tree, which is.
It's descriptive, right? It says seen. What it is, basically, based on the image itself. So it's got quite a good descriptive.
And then having the right schema in your code as well is a part of on-page SEO, and it can be linked to technical SEO as well. So it's both of them. So I personally feel schema is a part of technical SEO. Because it's more technical, that's why I feel it.
Yeah. And like you say, you know, talking about the schema part, you've got your website links. When you're typing in a certain URL on Google, you'll normally get home, about us, and those relevant categories, which are the site links.
Yes.
So that's obviously to do with schema markup. That's a part of schema markup coding to ensure that your various pages are showing on Google.
So I like to call schema is spoon feeding is the best explanation that I can I can get anyone in the beginner, who is a beginner to SEO. Spoon feeding is like when you tell Google that, okay, this is my title, treat this one as a title, this is my meta description, this is my heading one, and I'm talking about these topics. These are the list of topics that I'm talking about. And I'm an organization, and my organization logo is here. My organization can be found on Facebook here. My organization can be found on TripAdvisor here, or Yelp here, or all the listing where you're found. We have a Wikipedia page about our organization here. Our organization is about like if we are a roofing contractor or something like that. So you explain each and everything that you can do, you can practically do with your schema, and you explain it to Google. So why do we do it? basically Google is very fine. Google is very good at understanding the aspects of different things. So I don't have the statistics, but I can safely assume even in the SEO world as well, 96 or 97% of the people are not using schema. If you go to pages, they just use the default schema given by the plugin or something like that. But still, it's Google is giving, doing its best. Yeah, Google is doing its best job at finding content and understanding content and bringing it in front of users as well. So how are they doing it? Because they are best at understanding the content, its context. Still, it's important. We should not take a chance. It's important that we explain to Google. It's an added advantage, I would say. Schema, some people are seeing some technical issues, are saying it's increasingly becoming more important given the rise of search and generative experience, like the new Google that's coming. If you have seen it, it's just like ChatGPT or just like in Bing. You can tell them, show me the 10 best adult motorcycles that I can purchase. It will give you a different listings from different websites, and then you can click on and read more about it. So if you have a listing schema or something schema that's this talking about the listing, then maybe Google will be more easy. It will be more easier for Google to understand your content and present it to different people.
And you also got featured snippets, right, Cameron? You know, featured snippets that kind of feature on search engine results page on a specific topic.
Yeah.
That's kind of a different thing, but yeah.
So with the advancement of search generative experience and how Google is changing, schema is becoming more important, and you need to tell Google the different aspects of your page or website, so that Google is more able to understand you. So it's a kind of, we are spoon feeding Google. We are telling that's marking up different things. That's why it's called marking up. We are marking up different parts of our page and website and telling Google what it means. Okay, so that's, and then we are interrelating different entities. So schema in itself is a very advanced and a very detailed topic. People have created courses around it. We can, of course, have a podcast in future about it alone as well, once we have the basics of technical SEO covered. So it's a very different and very vast area. People are just scratching, I would say, the surface of it. We can interlink different schemas, entities together with the help of schema. We can even the Google knowledge panel at the local business knowledge panel that shows when you search for your brand name, that and what appears in that knowledge panel, like your Facebook page appears or not, that can be influenced by using the right schema on your website. So it's have a very long and vast impact even outside your website as well.
I think that's what we're obviously implementing at the moment. We're doing two for some of our two clients, we're doing knowledge panels, and I think we're in the process of setting the schema markup coding now for their website. So the important part, like you say, you know, you need to get your interlinking right, your notability, and then there comes your website for schema markup. So that's the language that Google can pick up when it comes to structured data. I think structured data is another discussion for another day, but it just shows the importance, Cameron, of where schema fits in the purpose of Google and your website. I think it's kind of playing that intermediary where it speaks to Google. It's kind of it's like having a relationship with Google in a way of getting Google to understand the importance of where.
Speaking to the search in their language. Speaking to the bots in their language is the same.
That's it. But like I said, I think we can even have another discussion separately on schema, because there's just so many things to chat around that. And another thing we just wanted to touch on, Cameron, is website architecture and URL structure. So both of these aspects have an impact on SEO rankings. Can you just give us some examples of how website architecture and your URL structure can impact SEO rankings?
So website architecture. So I will give you an example of like a large mall. So for example, if you, when you enter into a large mall, a shopping mall, and
yes.
then most of the mall, from what I have seen, they have a map in the first floor, or even in every floor they have. They have
yes.
a map,
like a map, yeah, of court, your first floor, second floor, third floor. Yeah.
The food court is here, and these are the brands in this floor. These are the brands in second floor. These are the brands in third floor. You
yes.
just enter the mall, find your shop that you want to, like, for example, if you're shopping for some clothing or food, want to eat some food, you just go at the right place. And then this is the same with the website as well. When a bot comes to you, you should have a clean website architecture. For example, the home page, some category pages if it's a content website, and then category pages linking out to different other pages as well. Like, for example, if I have a coffee website, coffee.com/coffee grinders, for example, if I'm talking, if one of my categories talking about coffee grinders, and
okay.
that category includes all the posts related to coffee grinders, all the content related to coffee grinders. So if someone wants to know something about coffee grinders, they will just come to that category and will search in that category particularly. This is a large website. So website
gotcha.
Architecture and URL structure. These are, to be honest, important for large websites so that users can navigate perfectly on the website, so that search engines, bots can equally navigate perfectly.
Okay.
For small websites, the search engines can crawl you perfectly if you don't have that much of a good website structure or architecture as well. If you don't have that, Google or other search engines can perfectly crawl you as well. Users can do as well. But still, it's important looking at the future growth opportunities that you might avail. So it's best to have it right from the first point, like from starting point, from day one, like have proper menu, navigation menu, where you can
yes.
linking out different things, like about us page, contact us page, privacy policy page, terms and conditions page as well. By the way, people who are watching, who are looking into earning some money from AdSense or other areas, they should have, it's important for them to have some pages. These are mandatory, like contact us pages, about us pages, privacy policies, policy page, and terms and conditions. These
that,
pages
and
are
that,
becoming
that
more...
helps with credibility, right? So it helps with the credibility aspects
yeah.
of your brand.
That's more important in the EEAT as well. That's another topic as well. And then linking
okay.
out to them in the menu of your website, it's important as well. And having a properly optimized menu, header menu, footer menu, sidebars, widgets, it all contributes to having a good site structure as well. So all
Brilliant.
Of these contribute to having you a more good user experience. Remember, we talked about user experience, a user interface as well.
Yes.
Remember, just think about a case when you open a website or when you open an app, then it was easy for you to find the things that you wanted to find. It's always when you found those things that you wanted to find easily, it always helped you in loving this website, loving this page, and the website or the app, and then you will convert more easily. And when you convert more easily, it means more money for the website. So it's really important for ranking as well, because bots can crawl them betterly, and then like in a better way, and then users as well can navigate easily, so it
easily
can,
through your
easily for you to convert people.
Brilliant. And then
yeah.
just talking about the maps in the shopping malls, you know, I think there's XML sitemaps. So can you just explain how these should be implemented on your website? So I think this is kind of a different take, but it's just another key important component when it comes to setting up your URL structure and your website.
So I will just add to that question as well. We will talk about robots.txt as well, because most of the time people are confused about the robots.txt, what it means, and then why do we have in a sitemap as well in addition to robots.txt as well. So we will just stick with the example of shopping mall. I will give credit to Christy Azarchik, who is a very advanced technical SEO. I have learned a lot of things from her as well. So she gave this example. So that's a perfect example to explain to someone who is a beginner. So for example, you have a shopping mall, the same shopping mall, and then they have an entry gate as well, like a wall in the entry gate. When you enter the gate, they check you as well. There they have a security checkpoint, and then you are checked.
That's a great way of explaining it. Yeah.
So when you enter that gate, if you can enter it or not, so it depends on the security clearance and everything you have. So that's the robots.txt.
Okay.
So for example, you enter that gate. You are now entered. You are allowed to enter that shopping mall. When you enter that shopping mall, and then in the shopping mall, you have that map of different shops. So the gate is robots.txt. The shopping mall is the website. And then the map is the sitemaps you are having. Bots, you allow them to enter via your robots.txt. So you allow them to enter. If you disallow them to enter, they will be just stopped at the gate. They will not need to be entered even into the shopping mall. So when they enter your shopping mall, they will be wondering like here and there, what do we do now? These are a lot of pages. These are a lot of shops to crawl and go and index them. So if you have a sitemap, if you have a map of everything, it will be easier for them to navigate. So the sitemap is that. So these are the finest explanation that I can give to anyone who is beginner. That this is the difference between robots.txt and sitemaps. Why are they important? So it's important for bots to crawl you perfectly and to index you perfectly. Of course, if you're not crawled, if you're not indexed, it means you are not even able to be ranked. Because to be able to be ranked on Google or any other search engine, the first step is you need to be crawled by Google. You need to be discovered by Google. You need to be crawled by Google. And then you need to be kind of indexed by Google. And the ranking
indexed by Google,
after these. Yes.
Okay. And just some examples, Cameron, looking at sitemaps. I know when you're looking at your own website sitemaps, you type in your website and XML dot. Can you just explain to the audience how to go about doing that? So when you're looking at your own sitemap of your website, what do you type in on the URL?
So the first thing that we need to clarify is you should have your sitemap created in order for you. These are not something that are automatically created. So
what tools can you use to create your sitemap? There's obviously things like Screaming Frog.
And WordPress, it can be easily created by using an SEO plugin like RankMath. Our Yoast SEO plugin. I mostly use RankMath. Earlier we were using Yoast SEO, but since the launch of RankMath, it has kind of outperformed Yoast SEO. So most of the time now we are using RankMath. So you can create your sitemaps in RankMath, and then
brilliant.
Once created, you can just another point is to include your sitemap in the robots.txt as well. So for example, the first thing that bots, when they come to your website, if they are allowed to go to your website, they and then in the robots.txt they find the sitemap URL as well. They just go to that sitemap URL and then crawl the rest of the website. This is the standard working is for my understanding. It can be different, of course, we don't know. So
yes,
including the sitemap URL in the index as in the robots.txt file is important. Robots.txt file and sitemap file, XML sitemaps, all of these can be created using plugins like RankMath and Yoast SEO. Now, when they are created, when they are created, normally most of the time, so in RankMath, they have this particular site URL structure, for example, site.com/sitemap.index or maybe it's sitemap_XML. It's something like
XML.
That.
So it's XML,
not,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not, I would say, a standard that we can set for the URL. Every website can have a different URL. But if they are using RankMates or Yoast SEO, I forgot that URL, but they have some standard structured URL. But of course, you can find it when you log into your website and go to that XML sitemap area in your plugin that you are using, any plugin that you are using. And there are other tools as well that if you are wanting to find the sitemap of another website that you don't own, you don't know what plugin they are using, so you can, you, the quickest way to find is just search on Google sitemap finder of a website or something like
brilliant.
That.
Brilliant. Just search, and we can add that link below too for everyone to have
yes,
a look at.
Yes, we can put the link below to some of those tools as well. And then there's a plugin as well that can help you find. So you just install it, it's a Chrome extension. You just install it, and if you want to find the robots.txt sitemap URL of any website, you just go to that website and click on that plugin button. It will give you that URL. We will put the link out to issue extension as well. And again, credit goes to Christine. She is the owner of that plugin as well.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. And then, Cameron, can you just touch on Screaming Frog? I know Screaming Frog is a great tool to use for SEO, technical SEO as well, mostly to do with sitemaps. What other aspects is Screaming Frog used for?
Screaming Frog, so it's a free and a paid tool, I would say. It's a premium tool. So the basic version is free. It can crawl up to 500 URLs, and then if you have a website that is more heavy, you will have to obviously pay for the premium version.
Pay for the premium.
So,
okay.
So it's a good tool that we normally use when we are auditing a website. So it's not to be used the sole tool when you are auditing. So it's good at finding some basic to intermediate level issues with your website that can be automated, and the issues that cannot be found automatically, obviously you will have to do it manually. So that's when I am auditing a site, I use Screaming Frog and along with other tools like OnCrawl and Sitebug. If you combine all three of these tools, each one can give you some extra value-added inputs, insights, and then you use your own insight as well, your own experience as well, like do the manual auditing, looking at the website, or looking at the Google Search Console. Of course, you combine all of the related technical SEO factors, and then you combine a joint consolidated site audit report that when you implement it, all the issues, you fix all the issues, hopefully your website will be much better than what it is now. So Screaming Frog, I would say it's good at finding technical SEO issues with your website, but only those issues that can be found automatically. For the manual issues like indexation, most of the time issues with your crawling, mobile visibility issues, I guess they have a mobile usability report as well, but most of the time I use manual issues with your website, security issues with your website. Most of them, for these kind of issues, I use Google Search Console and other tools apart from Google Screaming Frog. So that's, I would say, a brief explanation of Screaming Frog.
Brilliant. And Cameron, just looking at, we obviously touched on mobile earlier, but can you just give us also an understanding for the listeners and audiences out there, how does mobile optimization actually influence SEO, and how can it actually be implemented effectively?
Yeah, so mobile optimization, I would say, just like we mentioned earlier, it's affects SEO because it can affect the user's length of stay on your website. If the website is not loading quickly on your mobile, if it's not loading properly on mobile, of course they will bounce back and they will go to some other competitor's website. And if a lot of people start doing this, Google will de-rank you. So that's how it affects you. This is how simple it is. And then, of course, it can, if it's affecting SEO, of course, it can, unfortunately, it can kind of like land you in a position where you will be at a disadvantage to your competitors if they are using it the right way. So it's I would say the briefest explanation I can give is mobile optimization affects SEO, which in turn affects your ranking, which in turn affects your financial performance of your whole company or your whole organization. So it's really, yes, really important. And what some, if we talk about some best practices for mobile optimization, I guess, just like we mentioned earlier, when you find the best way to start doing this is to go to the tool that we will be putting the link in the description. You just go to that tool and see if your page is mobile friendly or not. If you have selected the right theme, like first step is to optimize your page, your website for page speed improvements. If that those okay. suggestions that I gave earlier, if those are implemented, like having the right hosting company, having the right servers, and having the right WordPress themes, if those yes. are and having no heavily bloated content in all those, if those are done right, most of the time you will be fine automatically. You just go to okay. the tool, you will be putting the link in the description, and just see if there is any problem with your page. If there is a problem, you just talk to your developer, and if you are a developer yourself, you fix those issues until it's mobile friendly. It's a
mobile friendly page. Okay.
Yes. That's the easiest way.
Brilliant. And then we've obviously touched on schema markup in SEO and how that can be implemented effectively. But can you just give us some other angles? You know, we've obviously given how the language speaks to Google in that sort of way, and the importance with your meta title, your title tags and meta description. But yeah, it would be great just to give maybe the audience and viewers some other aspects about the effectiveness and some techniques from implementing schema markup.
Yes, so schema markup, just like in any other SEO area that where we are improving things, the best way to start is just, for example, if I am optimizing my page for best ENT specialist in London. Let's see, ENT yes. is ear, nose, and throat kind of doctors. So
that's correct. Yeah. I actually went to one 2 weeks ago. Funny enough, I had an issue with my throat. So, yeah, I'm just putting it out there
because I visited them yesterday, so that's why. So,
okay.
So for example, a page for best ENT specialist for in London, I would okay. search for that keyword and look at the schema markup that my competitors are using.
Okay.
I will consult them in a report, and I will then look at them and see if they have used the right schema or not. Most of the time, if they are ranking, they would have used the right schema. You just use yes. that schema at minimum, and then go a little bit more advanced, like using entities. Okay. Same as kind of schema and all those related schemas in your content. So that's the kind of another angle that I wanted to give you. It's like doing the same, just like we do in normal competitor research. You just go to Google and see what are your competitors doing, and just beat them at it. That's the simplest thing I would see.
That's the simplest part. Definitely. And like I said, you know, we obviously have your site links, which are a major contribution where schema markup comes on. So it's important that how your website can rank on Google to give you more in-depth overview of your various page categories and how you're ranking accordingly.
Yes, the website crawlability and its structure. Are we talking about that?
That's correct. Yes, just the structure and the nature of how it appears on search.
Yeah, like you mentioned earlier, as well. It's very necessary, like the website structure. If it's properly structured website, if it's website that users can navigate easily, that search engines can navigate easily, then obviously it can affect your crawl budget as well. Like Google, just think it like this. Google is an enterprise. They want to make money. They want to make money with using less resources. So if a website is taking a lot of resources from them versus a website that is having the same content and taking less resources.
Yes, exactly.
For them to choose that website, given all other aspects are constant, like content and other areas are constant. We are just talking about the bloating and the budget that crawl budget that some websites are using. So if we keep all other factors constant and just talk about crawl budget, then obviously they are going to use the website that uses the less crawl budget. So it's particularly important for websites, just like I mentioned earlier. You need to have a good structured website so that it can use less resources from Google, so that it can then be easily ranked and easily crawled and easily indexed by Google. So it's
exactly
important. Of course.
Brilliant. Yes. And then, so Cameron, I think, we've touched a lot so far on everything. And I think this is such invaluable information that you've already shared. We've also touched on website crawlability and indexing and how that can be improved for better search engine visibility, just like you said earlier. But I think let's move on to question 9. What are the common issues with duplicator content? Because this is a discussion we always have internally as well, and it's an important component to let our viewers know and listeners, how can this actually be resolved if you've got duplicate content? What are the common denominators around duplicate content, and how can that be resolved?
The first step, I would say, is to identify duplicate content.
Okay.
So identifying is, it's beautifully done if you're like, identification is done via a tool called Siteliner, I guess. It's a great way to spot duplicate content. We will put the link in the description again. I will share it.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Once you have content, and now let's now define what is duplicate content. So basically, there is no set definition, but most SEOs say if like 50% of the content that you are talking about and other page or someone else is talking about externally is the same as your content, then these can be called as duplicate content, 50%. But there are no set rules by Google, I don't think. They just use the word duplicate. We don't know by what do they mean by duplicate. Like we have seen websites, for example, if a plumber in New York is doing a website, is using some content in a website, I can replicate the same. We have seen examples of websites who are using the same website and ranking it for plumber and Islamabad, for example, in some other city around other world. So in local, it is different concept in local SEO and international SEO versus content SEO. So it's versus e-commerce SEO as well, of course. So some people, even in e-commerce, I can give you another example. They just, when they are drop shipping, they just take the description of the supplier from that website. So for the supplier is the same. 10 different people are taking the same product from that supplier, and 10 different websites are talking actually about the same thing, and they're all earning money as well. So it's a different concept when you talk about different SEO and like e-commerce SEO or local SEO or international content SEO. They are no set definition, but the idea is you should not just be repeating what others are repeating. You should be giving unique context. You should be giving unique point of view that can actually help users. So that's a standard point of view. You should be better at what other people are talking about on online. So you should be better at it. So
it's
now,
got to be original, human. You know, like it comes from the new eat, the new E in eat. So I think the experience part plays a big role from a content perspective. Yeah.
Yes. So it should not be basically a rephrased version of all the online versions that we have. So another point to cover is now that you have identified duplicate content, is to just fix it by changing the content. That's the simplest
thing
that we can have.
By
changing the angle that we are talking about. And then once you have fixed it, just request Google to index it again, and so that Google can reconsider it again. And one thing that I have normally noticed is Google takes a lot of time to reconsider a page and then re-rank it based on the new content. So you should be patient. In general, as well, you should be very, very patient about different things and in seeing results. You should be constant. You should be patient, and you should be actually believing in the system.
Definitely. And then just touching on duplicate content, we've got a key definition called canonical tags. And I think those are the important aspects of how they can assist with duplicated content and URL variations. Can you just give the audience and listeners an overview of how canonical tags play an integral part in SEO?
Yeah, so canonical tags, so basically what they do normally is a normal rule of thumb. We can of course have a differentiation around canonical tags and the types of them and how it would use them. Most of the time you should have on a page you should have a self-referencing canonical. Self-referencing canonical means, for example, if my page is about site.com/abc, my canonical should be as well site.com/abc. It means it's referencing to itself. But when you have a duplicate content somewhere else in your page, you tell Google which one to consider. And that is done via Google.
And that one will rank accordingly compared to the other one, right? So you'll have ABC one and ABC two won't rank.
Google will not consider the other one. So you just tell the Google which one to consider via canonical tag. For example, if site.com/abc is the same as slice.com/xyz, you tell you put a canonical tag on. For example, you want Google to index site.com/abc. You want them to consider this, although both of them are the same. So what you do is you put a canonical tag on site.com/abc is like site.com/abc. It should be a self-referencing, and the other duplicate page site.com/xyz. You put a canonical tag is site.com/abc. So it will be not a self-referencing. It will be referencing to the other page. So that's how you fix content issues via canonical tags. You tell Google which one to consider. It's the
brilliant.
Same meme. Have you seen that? Where different Spider-Mans are pointing out to one another, like one is saying he, one is saying he, and another one is saying he. They are pointing fingers at one another. If you have seen that meme, canonical tag is the same meme.
Yes, that's a brilliant one. So it's like, it's just this whole redirectory of a cycle, you know, but it points
like
to the...
You are telling Google which one to consider. I'm actually searching for that meme. It's a Spider-Man meme, I guess. Pointing fingers. You can actually show to your user if you
Brilliant.
Can see it. Yeah, this is the meme that I... I guess it's blurred.
Let's share it on the link below. So that's a really good one to share, you know. At least we've got a bit of humor with SEO here, folks. So, but Cameron, I really want to thank you for your time. I think that wraps up our first part of the series. I think in our second series episode, we're going to definitely be delving into more advanced aspects with SEO and things like the best practices of optimizing images for SEO, meta tag titles, meta descriptions, and how they impact SEO rankings. And then we're also going to delve into structured data in SEO and how it can enhance search engine results. And more importantly, there's also redirects, you know, your 301s, 302s, and how they can be optimized for SEO. And then broken links is another important factor and how they can be fixed. HTTPS and website security influence for SEO rankings. And then we've also got robots txt and how they should be used in SEO. I know we touched a bit on robots txt earlier, but I think in this sense we can go delve further into that in further detail. And then we've also got the importance of h1 h2 headings and how they can contribute to SEO optimization. I know we also earlier touched a bit of that on touch base a bit of that on page SEO. So Then we'll also be delving into some of the best practices for optimizing internal linking on a website, and how can monitoring and analysis of website analytics data help improve SEO efforts. So there's a lot of exciting things coming up in our next episode. And Cameron, I really appreciate your time. I know you've got to get back to a lot of auditing down the line with some of our clients. So keep on doing a sterling job. And it's been really great having you on the show. And we'll obviously we'll definitely be sharing all those relevant links with our listeners and audiences. And looking forward to the next part episode with you for next week.
Thank you for having me. And I look forward to seeing you again in the next episode.
Thanks very much, Cameron. Have a great one.
Thank you.